Hi, it's Dr. Linda Papadopoulos with The Psychology Behind. Now, today's guest is the very fabulous Susie Grant. Now, Susie is almost 70, and she speaks about something that I think concerns us all, regardless of our age. She speaks about aging positively. And I've got to say, in a world where it feels like, you know, we celebrate youth to the detriment of getting older, to the detriment of wisdom and of the people around us that could give us something as they age, I think meeting someone like this is brilliant. And I really hope you enjoy my chat with her. In it, we touch on various things. We touch on the importance of community and eating the right foods, but also on kind of redefining what it means to be older. It was just a lovely chat, and I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed speaking to Susie. Here it is. Susie's a lot of things. She's a qualified nutritionist. She's a broadcaster. She's a blogger. She's written three fabulous health books. And actually, her most recent book focuses on I guess, positive aging. It's called Alternative Aging, How to Stay Looking and Feeling Younger for Longer. And I'm delighted to have her here. Welcome, Susie.
Thank you, Linda. And I am delighted to be here as well. And I feel very honored.
Well, likewise, it's great to have you. I've got to say, one of the first things that struck me when I came across you is your amazing, I guess, energy, for want of a better word, right? And I don't mean this in a kind of cat poster kind of way, but you genuinely exude this zest for life, this sort of positivity. And I wish we were actually filming this, because I literally cannot believe how old you are, given just the way you look and the way you move. So tell me about why it is that you think you've managed to kind of maintain this youthfulness when so many of us kind of just constantly feel tired and lethargic and are, you know, complaining about the years passing.
Very good question, and it might take me hours to answer. I think the crux of it, Linda, is that I will get onto this later, but my mum died way too young, so I took stock of my life, and that's why I trained as a nutritionist. So for the last 20 years, after a mad, mad career in TV and radio, I've worked really hard on staying healthy. Now, my next birthday at the end of this year is 70. I'm even more empowered to go forward and stay healthy. I want to live a long time. I mean, I actually said to the cab driver this morning, well, if I'm lucky, I've got another 20 years. My life is really precious now. So I keep researching, I keep blogging, I keep writing about it, but I'm really, really invested in my own health and everyone else's health in my age group, because I don't think it is inevitable that people in their mid-60s, apparently in the States and in Europe, are on an average of 5 prescription drugs a day. Jeez. I want to stay prescription drug free for as long as possible. I believe in prevention rather than cure.
Yeah.
So I do work very hard at it, and I'll go into that if you want me to. And I do get tired. I can't work 10-hour days anymore. I couldn't do a 9-to-5 job with a commute. I'm not as physically strong or energized as I appear, but I'm a bit like a Duracell bunny. I will go crazy, 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 and then suddenly, like a child, actually, we do go full. Do you believe we go full circle?
I do. No, but there is something about that. But look, on a serious note, and I find it, look, as a woman kind of who sort of values herself and other women for much more than their youth and beauty, it still kind of strikes me that we live in a culture where youth and beauty, especially for women, are overvalued in relation to other assets. And it's almost as if the kind of the social equity ends when you're like sort of 25. And to me, I think that's something we need to really kind of rally against. I was reading this great quote by Miuccia Prada, the woman who started Prada, and they were asking her about young men and dating and if she has Botox or whatever. And she said, darling, you don't need Botox to have sex till you're 100. You just need to make a lot of money. And I thought, you rock, Miuccia. But I think there's something something around this valuation of worth and women's worth. And I don't think we're immune to it. I mean, I've written about this for years. In my much younger years, I modeled. So looks have always, if I'm really honest, been a part of it. Now, I've always loved my PhD a lot more than my highlights. But as you start to see the fine lines, as you start to even feel more tired, it's hard because you live in a world that's constantly telling you this is what's the most important thing. Can you tell me about your kind of sort of that transition from, youth to...
And that's actually a very, very appropriate question, because one of the things I hated about working in TV, I was in my mid-40s by the time I stopped working full-time, was that you become incredibly vain, because it was, and as you so rightly say, still is, so focused, especially women, so focused on women looking young. And I refused and still refuse to mess with my face and have anything put into it. I mean, Botox, why would you want to put that in your body? So I do go for absolutely natural. But that was one of the reasons I was happy to leave TV, because everything was about who's had a facelift and how many wrinkles have I gotten. Oh, God, my double chin. I still have a thing about my double chin when I do my YouTube videos. But who cares? What I care about now more than anything is, yes, I stay slim, and I'm very lucky. I have good genes. I do have good genes. I didn't have children, so I haven't had that stress, although I had a very stressful career. But I do believe some people age considerably more because they have a stressful household with five kids running around. Sure. Sleep.
No, but stress. So my PhD was in sort of psychoneuroimmunology and skin. I focused on the skin. The idea that that thoughts are these intangible things that don't affect you is completely untrue. We know they affect your biochemistry. We know they affect the function of the skin. So I think you're spot on. But I think also there's something about having a self-esteem that lasts through life. And this I find interesting, right? So you just met my 16-year-old daughter, and obviously her self-esteem is going to be based on different things than mine and then on yours. But there is something about the way that we devalue people of an older age, or we don't value them enough, that it's quite upsetting, I think, in our culture.
It is peculiar to our culture and the US and the UK particularly, because it doesn't seem to be as prominent in Europe. Families still sit down together. Grandparents, great-grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, and they have big family lunches, and they wonder why the Mediterranean diet's the healthiest in the world. I'm sure that's got something to do with it. We're in the UK, and I include myself in this, rushing around, maybe watching TV while you're eating, or somebody eating, or working on the laptop, grabbing something. And I think our society is a bit pants at it, and it's got to change. And I hope youngsters will grow up on this ever decreasingly nice planet and do something about it, because we're far too geared into... Anti-aging is a word I loathe, because why should we be anti-aging? The only alternative is dying. But we're anti-war, we're anti-poverty, we're anti-homelessness, we're anti-cruelty. Why on earth are we anti-aging? I won't work with brands who use anti-aging in there. And I, at short shrift, no.
But this is it. But the thing is it becomes wallpaper and background noise. So much of the way that we perceive the world is based on things that we never spend time actually analyzing. The term anti-aging just is like, oh, it's what's on my bottle of cream. Or that, you don't think about it. And it's not until you stop. And I think that's the real issue. We're geared up to avoid getting older. And as a consequence, we devalue the things that getting older brings. And there is something about having that sense of entitlement. So, as a woman in her mid-40s, one of the things that I always, speak about, with my friends is like, at least where I am in my life, I don't feel like I did when I was 20, where I had to please everyone, where I had to, work with things, or people or organizations that I wasn't sure about, because I just felt I had to be the good girl. I feel that I, a greater sense of entitlement, that comes with age. The wisdom of not sweating the little stuff, that comes with age. The ability to value small things and not to buy into the BS of what you should have, that comes with age. But very sadly, we don't speak about the gains of getting older. It's all about the losses. Oh, my eyes don't work as well. My bones hurt.
So negative.
It's always negative. Yes. And there's no antidote. And I think that's the issue. And I think that's what I really enjoy about your work, it's extremely positive. It's, you know, because frankly in life we can always focus on what we're losing, or we can focus on what we have or what we hope to have.
Exactly. There's no reason, and that's why my blog is so popular, an Instagram account, because I can't be, I mean, yes, I get depressed like everyone else. The grey weather that lasted for a week really got me down, and I actually did a whole feed saying I'm feeling really grey and my feed's looking grey. So I'm honest, I share things, but it's as you said, don't sweat the small stuff. I've got flabby thighs. So what? My legs work and I can walk 10,000 steps a day. I have a much bigger midriff than I did when I was 20 something, but I'm still the same weight because I take care of myself and make sure I'm in shape. But for me, it's not about how good do I look or how young do I look. It's about how healthy am I? And I'm in well over 60, as you know, but my metabolic age is only 52.
That's amazing.
Because, and I don't pump iron or go to the gym like a mad gym bunny.
Well, I'm actually going to ask you to explain metabolic rate for our listeners. What does that actually mean?
I think you could probably do it better than me. I just basically got on the scales at the gym. I think most gyms have them now, and they measure your BMI, they measure your internal body fat, they measure your external body fat, they measure the amount of water, they do things that I don't even begin to understand. But at the end of it all, you put your age in, that you put your weight in, and you put everything else in that they need. And then they come out and say, they did it on TV recently, and some people in their 50s were coming out at 96 because they were so overweight and unfit.
Well, I'm guessing what it has to do is kind of the difference between muscle and fat
muscle,
and toxins
muscle.
In your body and how it faster metabolizes
exactly.
Nutrients. Exactly. So, no, I think that's really positive. I guess the other big thing that that increasingly we're hearing about, very sadly, is the increase in dementia. We're living longer. You know, thankfully, we're learning more and more about dementia, but that's a real kind of worry. Tell me, in terms of your own work in nutrition and your own experience, what do you do to stay sharp, to kind of keep those neurons firing?
That's a really interesting question, because like anyone in their late 40s, 50s, it's early 60s, whenever it comes, your memory starts going. And I could be in the middle of a sentence and then forget a word. And I'd be like, what's that word? I only do it now if I haven't slept enough. But blogging changed my life. Brain-wise, physically it didn't, because I sit down way too much. But just having to learn all the technology, I had to be taught the back end for the technology. I do my own videos, I had to learn to edit. I do a lot of photography, I did a photography course. So I didn't stop learning for the first 2 years.
And you know what? There's some really interesting research, because people think in order to keep the mind sharp, you just need to continue reading or doing what you're doing. But actually, you need to learn something new. That's the stuff that really matters. So for people out there listening, it is taking up a new language, learning a new dance, or like you're saying, doing a course in photography, or that's the stuff that matters.
Exactly. Anything. And especially for the older listeners, finding something that you're passionate about, that you love doing. It could be anything. It could be gardening, it could be pet care or clipping pets. It doesn't matter, just find your passion, because it gives you a reason to get out of bed in the morning. And there is no question, there's so much more evidence every day about avoiding Alzheimer's and just memory function. But the most important things, apart from a really good diet, is definitely enough sleep, exercise, relaxation, and believe it or not, apparently I did write about this once, keeping your teeth clean.
Plaque.
Yes, because that can lead to strokes and all sorts.
Well, yeah, the same plaques with heart health and everything. That's really interesting. You mentioned nutrition. So tell me, so you said, and I actually read this when I was reading about it and I found it interesting. So you said that prior to your mother's untimely passing, your mom was in her early 60s when she passed.
She was 62 and I was 42.
Oh my gosh. But that was a real seminal turning point for you. So I asked you, I know before you came in, to kind of speak to me about sort of three things, a moment in your life where you turned, a comfort and a challenge. Was that the moment, Susie?
I think it was, because I was in TV worrying about my wrinkles and working really strange hours. And it was high power, but great fun. I mean, it's actually, I lie. Radio was the best job of my entire really? Life. I love radio. That's why I'm addicted to podcasts. I can't go to sleep without a podcast on. I wake up with a podcast on or the radio. Radio was my first passion, without a doubt. And you can look how ever you like on radio. Yeah, and I still do radio. I do BBC Sussex from time to time, and I love it. And I used to do the breakfast programme, News and Weather, with, for anyone young enough to remember, Graham Dean for Capital Radio. Best job in the world. Loved it. Then I moved to TV, and it was great. I mean, I did some really exciting stuff. Travelled a lot, did a whole year of showbiz, so interviewed amazing people.
So things were going great.
And then suddenly my mum died from a massive heart attack at the age of 62. Now, bearing in mind that she was Bulgarian, so she brought me up on the healthiest diet that you could conceive in the 50s. The UK in the 50s, for anyone who can remember, yes, it was healthy in as much as we walked everywhere. Very few people had cars. Very few people had TVs. We were much healthier, slimmer, definitely, and far more physically active. But it was meat and two veg. And my mum brought me up, or both of us, I have a brother and dad who was very English, on a very Mediterranean diet, because Bulgarians like a mixture of Turkish and Mediterranean. Uh-huh. So it was meat once or twice a week, mm-hmm. max, fish on yeah. Friday, even though we weren't Catholics. Yeah. She grew a lot of veg. She did the most amazing dishes. I mean, if we had pasta, there'd be a huge tomato salad with it. I grew up and still am passionately loving salads. I can't eat a meal without a side salad. I'm so weird for an English person. And she introduced olive oil into the house in the 50s. Now, in the 50s in the UK, there were no supermarkets. She had to go to the chemist, the pharmacy, to buy olive oil, which was only on sale in teeny weeny bottles.
So you have to get it from the chemist for that?
And it was only for removing earwax. It wasn't for eating. It was for removing earwax.
Lord, you're going to put me off olive oil. Stop it. So she's got a healthy lifestyle. So this must have come as a real shock.
Well, the psychologist in you will love the rest of the story. So brought up on a really, really healthy diet, and I'm convinced it stood me in good stead forever. I'm called rubber bones. I mean, I can fall over in the street hard, and people think because of my age, I've really hurt myself, and I just sit and laugh. It happened in Yorkshire for New Year's Eve. I just sit and laugh like a lunatic. It must be shock or something. I don't know. Not a bruise on me. So, you know, very, very, very healthy start to life, which I think is incredibly important for children. But as she got older, she was incredibly beautiful. I mean, stunningly beautiful. She could have been a model, but she had me at 1920. Not 1920, I'm not that old. And I think she resented, we didn't have the best relationship, but I think she resented having a kid so young. Mm-hmm. She was going to be a journalist. It was probably an accident. She met my dad in Prague. They came back to England. She never forgave him because he told her, you know, typical bullshit man, you know, I've got this wonderful young new wife, told her that his parents lived in this huge house in London, which to a girl from Bulgaria who'd come from very good stock, but she thought it was going to be, you know, Downton Abbey,
yeah.
But it was actually a house in Catford, and Catford in those days, southeast London, was not the best of areas. It was a big house, actually. It was a big Edwardian house, but she never forgave him for that. So sadly for my mum, she became more and more embittered. Right. She had my little brother. He was always the favourite. From teenage onwards, I couldn't do right.
Right, right.
Whatever he did was wonderful. And whatever I did was and guess what happened at the end? He's the failure, living in a van, and whatever I do would never have been good enough. But sadly, she got very embittered and very unhappy with my dad, so they divorced.
Right.
I was at boarding school. I asked to go to boarding school.
Wow.
That's unusual. That says a lot about me, and that's why I'm so independent now.
Right.
14, please can I go to boarding school? All my friends were there. It was like being an only child, because my brother was 9 years younger than me. So she got older and older, remarried. He was incredibly rich. She was never happy. It didn't matter how many mink coats he threw at her and how much first class travel they did. She wasn't happy. She divorced him. And she ended up in Spain drinking herself to oblivion. She'd never admit to being an alcoholic. So extremely unfit, very overweight, and took absolutely no exercise. And most importantly of all, and let this be a lesson to us all, was deeply unhappy. If we had had a better relationship, I would have got her to do something like I was doing, because she was so bright. She spoke six languages. So it was, I think, because of that generation, she had been brought, you know, she'd grown up in England, basically. And women didn't go out to work when she was, and she was a brilliant mother, may I say. She was a wonderful mother till I became an adult.
And so were you ever able to repair the relationship?
Not really. We've done it, you know, with synchronicity. Yes, exactly. Yes, I forgive her totally. I mean, I just wish that I'd had the knowledge at 42 that I have now, because I would have sat down and said, look, Mom, come on. You need to get a grip.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's interesting that you did it for you. You got a grip, because at 42, that's where you turned things around, right?
Exactly. Thank you, Mum, because that was my big lesson. I was like, hang on a minute. I made the GP take it off my records. I said, do not put that down as a genetic predisposition. Because my mum drank, was overweight and took no exercise. I ain't going the same way. Mm. And he did.
Isn't that interesting?
And that, yes, you're right. That was definitely my moment, because yeah. I was determined not to end up miserable, alone, unhappy, bored, and drinking myself to oblivion, which, let's face it, we're all three steps away from that.
Well, absolutely. Well, look, and the other interesting thing is, and I find this specific, especially now when we speak a lot about almost being beholden to genetics. We know genetics are important, but I always think of genetics like, you know, you're being dealt a hand of cards. And actually, you can win with a losing hand, and you can lose with an amazing winning hand. Like, what you do matters. And so, again, I think for people out there, you know, because right now, you know, you spit into a bottle and they tell you all of these genetic predispositions you have. And, you know, people often say, well, I'd rather not know. No, I think we should know, because actually, you know, the way, you know, whether or not, you know, these genes express themselves in the way they do depends in many cases, maybe not all, but in an important, you know, a section of cases, in terms of how we decide to behave, making the right choices, you know, about the food we consume and the information we consume and the people that are around us and the way that we move. I mean, we have a lot of power in there. So I love the idea that you told your doctor, you know, I am not going to, you know, inevitably be this, because to me, this speaks to your own sense of volition over your life, which I think brings us interestingly into your comfort. So you tell me about the comfort that you use, that one thing that allows you to kind of recenter yourself.
Well, again, I've been on the life path, as we all have, for many years. And the more I listen to podcasts and the more I read, the more I realize how incredibly important meditation is. So I got myself an app, because I'm a type A personality, and the minute I wake up, I want to get on my Instagram, check my emails. It's like an addiction. It's ridiculous. I let the dog out. I make a cup of coffee. Don't judge me. I only have two a day before noon. And they're weak and they're organic. And I go back to, anyway, I then discovered a wonderful app. I have done many meditation classes and much yoga, and I still do, and Pilates. But I find sitting in a room with a load of people quite difficult to do for 40 minutes. So I then came across this wonderful app, which gives you a different 10-minute meditation every single day. And it's changed my life, Linda. It's absolutely changed my life.
What does it do for you?
It just centers me. I feel focused. I don't feel so. I'm going to start doing it before bed as well. Because I'm a teeth grinder. Okay. And the dentist said yesterday, I really think you need to do some. And I said, don't, apart from last night when I had a little bit of stress that we talked about earlier. apart from the odd stressful nights, I sleep like a baby because I make sure I do my 10,000 steps a day at least. So I said to him, I don't understand why I'm so stressed in my sleep. He said, well, it's obviously stuff coming out. So I'm going to start doing the meditation at night as well. It's 10 minutes. Who can't spare 10 minutes? And if you do it the second you wake up, you're set for the day. It's changed me so much in not getting attached to worries. People, now this is something interesting to look forward to. People turn into worry warts when they get older. My friend who I'm meeting for lunch today, I actually sent a text going, oh, you're just a worry wart. We check and double check. I don't know whether it's because we don't think our brains are going to be, maybe we can't rely on our brains. Maybe we just worry more. But traveling is more stressful. Packing's more stressful. Making appointments is more stressful. Check and check and check again. I don't know why we get like that, but look out for that.
So that's what meditation helps with.
It's really annoying, but meditation really helps with that. You don't sweat the small stuff. Nothing matters. My word for the year is prioritize, and that came through meditation, because everyone in my little photography group and on Instagram was going on about what's your word for 2019. Mm-hmm. And why is a big one. I'm sure you're aware of that. Everyone's going, why? And it suddenly came to me after meditation, prioritize. And if I prioritize and if I meditate, you can throw anything at me.
On prioritize, I find that a particularly big challenge living in the world that we do today, though, because at any single moment, I mean, we've just all turned our phones off to do this, right? But you kind of think of how interrupted you are constantly with news flashes, with somebody else's life, with the way you're being perceived. It's so difficult. And I certainly find that people that I speak to speak about this a lot, just the inability to sit and focus and actually finish something through. So I think there's a lot to be said about just having those priorities.
Absolutely. And I'm a great fan of siestas. They're there for a reason. Yeah. They're part of our circadian rhythm. However, not everybody can go and lie on a bed for half an hour, but just 10 minutes rest time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be lying down. It doesn't have to be sleeping. It doesn't have to be meditating, but just 10 minutes, the phone on silent. Yeah, there is a button, do not disturb. I use it all the time.
Well, this is it. And I think, you know, we don't need, look, all of these notifications on our phones and our world,
they're there
to catch your attention. I remember, you know, the Astons underneath the news of breaking news. The first time those came out was like 9/11, I think, like all those years ago, around that time. But since then, like breaking news, it's like woman wears different colored shirt. Like, it's truly ridiculous. They're there to catch, because there's so much information. So you need to kind of be very aware of like the colors. I tell people even on their phones, and we're going to do another podcast about this as well, but just mute the colors on your phone. Something as simple as that, so it's not as engaging, will mean you're less likely to play around with it.
And use the night vision one. They've got a wonderful night vision color, because it's nothing worse than getting up in the middle of the night to go to the loo, and me with my podcast addiction, which you probably think as a psychologist I should give up.
We'll talk about that.
But, you know, I've got a dark screen. It's in airplane mode.
Yeah.
Isn't going to hurt me? But you're absolutely right. I worked and grew up in a time when we had fax machines and a landline and no mobiles, and it was bliss looking back.
I guess everyone sort of sees these sort of times in their life. My mom has this saying, when she'll hear a song, she'll go, oh, that's from my time. What time do you think is your time? Do you think it's now? Do you think
I'm going to show you something, because this is another New Year's resolution. Because of the phone and the Instagram and the blogging and the Twitter and the emails, I now carry a book around.
Oasis, what's the story?
Oasis is my favourite band. That keeps me young. I love music.
I love their music as well.
You're never too old to go to a gig or a festival.
Absolutely.
And somebody gave me this at Christmas, and I thought, I'm putting this in the bag, because I only ever read on holiday. And it's like, why have I stopped reading? Yeah. Because of that bloody phone. So reading.
Amazing.
Reading.
So tell me, what is your challenge then for 2019? What is the thing that you're
doing? Oh, I think we just covered that. Read more.
Is it read more?
Read more and look at the phone less. What's this? Really, seriously, to stay healthy. I mean, that to me, why would anything else be important? Nothing is as important as your health, your loved one's health, your health meaning physically and mentally. I want to stay happy. There is so much, as you are well aware, there is so much depression around. There is so much sadness in the world. There's so much worry. There are so many lunatics in power. It's just, you have to stay true to yourself and look after yourself. It sounds very selfish, but you have to, because
it doesn't sound selfish.
You can't look after anyone else if you're not looking after yourself.
Well, lovely Susie, it's been a pleasure to have you speaking to us and telling us everything. Just tell us again what the title of your book is and where people can get it.
I've loved talking to you. I could talk to you for hours. I want to talk about my mother with you now for hours. Right, you can find me on Amazon. My book is out on Amazon. It's called Alternative Aging, spelled the English way, A-G-E-I-N-G. It's a very pretty blue book. And my blog's the same name, Alternative Aging, and Instagram, Alternative Aging. So just think alternative aging. There's no alternative to aging. Just get on with it.
Fantastic. Susie Grant, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
So that was Susie Grant. I'm back again with my new podcast next week. I really hope you're enjoying these. I'm really enjoying doing them. If you are, you know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe. And until we meet again, I wish you a very healthy and a very happy body and mind.